We're going to be in Ruth, chapter 4. We're going to finish up the book of Ruth today. A lot of times we look at the scriptures and we say, well, okay, what's going to change my life in here today, right? I mean, I hope that's the way we look at scriptures. What is there that I'm finding today that I can work on? Now we're going to find some of that there today too. A lot of it's, you know, not to sound like a broken record, a lot of it's the same as last week. We're going to see the faithfulness of God and his redeeming work played out here in the story of Ruth. But one of the things, and I think it's completely appropriate, I was just racking my brain about how are we going to apply this? So don't you like it when you get the application first? Sure, yeah. It's like those test questions you took at school, right? And they have the answers embedded within the question. I love those. Oh, the answer is in the next question. No, I didn't like that. The reason, because then I would have to go and erase the question before. I like the ones that are already there. They tell you which answer to mark C. I like them both. Anyway. And I hadn't planned on this emphasis until I thought about what week it is. It's Thanksgiving week. I'm still in September, folks. And it's snowing. I hope you enjoyed the new snow on the ground. It's lovely and beautiful at my house. We have a little bit more. It snowed about 4 inches at my house. So if you want to go see more snow, you better come up and visit. We're in the book of Ruth, and I want you to think, as you know, we haven't been focusing so much on the love story. We haven't really been focusing so much on the romance novel part of this book, okay? There are other lessons to learn. We focused on the sovereignty of God. We focused on what it means for Boaz to be a kinsman redeemer, or if you want the Hebrew word, it's the goel, okay? And so we've kind of focused on these other aspects, not necessarily the ushy-gushy part, right? And we're going to continue to do that today. We're not focusing so much on the love part, but there's some really cool things in here. You're going to see it. Chapter 4, verse 1 says, "Now Boaz had gone up to the gate, and he sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, 'Turn aside, friend, sit down here.' And he turned aside and sat down, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, 'Sit down here.' And so they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought that I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is none besides you to redeem it, and I come after you.' And he said, 'I will redeem it.' Then Boaz says, 'The day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth, a Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance.' Then the Redeemer said, 'I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it.' Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm a transaction. The one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, 'Buy it for yourself,' he drew off his sandal, and then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, 'You are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon, and also to Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon. I have bought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day Then all the people who were at the gate, the elder said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman." Kind of an interesting turn of events here, isn't it? You remember where we left off last time? Ruth comes to Boaz and says, "Here, will you take care of us? If you're the redeemer, take the corner of your, spread your wings over me." And he said, "Well, there's another guy. He's closer. He has to have the right before me." Says, and then so she goes back and tells her mother-in-law everything that goes on, and says, and Naomi says to Ruth, "Just wait. This day, everything will be taken care of. He's not going to rest." And the next thing we see, there he is. He's in town. And so the first place that he goes to the gate of the city. And you're like, okay, so what's really so important about the gate? Well, as you study, the gate is an extremely important place in Israel or in any town, okay? They didn't have city hall. They didn't have a courthouse. You know, when you buy a piece of property and you go, everything goes up to the records, and that's where you make your business happen. When my wife and I bought our house, okay, you know, you're supposed to do your homesteading or whatever it is for your taxes, and you have to have that done by such and such a date. We've already done that, and so we have to go up to the courthouse and do our thing. Well, they didn't have courthouses, okay? They didn't have a system of records. They didn't have that stuff. So all business, all major business transactions, things that people in general needed to know about, they happened in the gate of the city. Why do you think they happened in the gate of the city? That's where all the action was. Exactly. Exactly. So if you live in a place where there's a gate around the city, there's only, you know, a few ways in and a few ways out, right? You know, and so the gate of the city, the main road, the main entrance, that's where everybody's coming in and everybody's coming out. That's where people are bringing in their goods to sell in the market. That's where people are heading out to the fields, and that's what happens. That's kind of the way life was. And so the elders of the city would often pass through this way, and so Boaz shows up at the gate early. He waits for this other redeemer. We don't know his name. He says, "Hey, you, come over here and sit with me." He says, "Sit right down." He says, "Okay." And he says, "Hold on a second." So he gets 10 elders, or the older, more well-known men of the city. He says, "Come on, guys, let's sit down. We got some business to take care of." And he basically tells them, he says, "All right, buddy, you guys watch this. I need you to listen." He looks up, gets this guy that we don't know his name. Should we give him a name today? Should we call him just, there's no Freds in here today, right? Bob, would that work? Bob, okay. All right, Bob Redeemer. Here you are. Naomi is selling the piece of land that belonged to Elimelech. Oh, okay. If you want to redeem it, go ahead and redeem it. But if you don't want it, I'll take it, because I'm next after you. That's basically what he says. He says, "Oh, really? Sure, I'll redeem that land. That's good." Because what's he doing? He's basically saying, "Great, keep it in the family. I get to use that land, and it's going to be mine." Great. In return, he's probably thinking, you know, I'm going to have to take care of Naomi, because Naomi's name comes up, and okay, because that's probably part of the price, is I'm taking care of her now. I'm going to take this land, I'm going to farm it, I'm going to work it, whatever it takes, whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do it, and Naomi is part of that. Okay, I'll redeem it. Great. But I like this part. Boaz says, there's one more thing. There's a catch. When you buy it, you have to take... Now, I want you to look at this, okay? Look back in your Bibles. Okay? Where is it? Yeah, down in verse 5 it says, then Boaz said, the day that you buy it from the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire who? Who? Oh, Ruth the Moabitess. Oh, you know, that's different. Well, no. I think everybody knew who Ruth was. She had been in town for, you know, the time of the harvest, however long that was, whether it was a couple of months or whether it was, you know, 3 or 4 months, who knows? Because they would plant different fields at different times and they would just move as one matured, they would go on to the next. And we don't have that here because our growing seasons are a little shorter, right? So we mix beans and corn, or I don't know what they grow further up north. I'm from Iowa. We grow beans and corn. Occasionally you have winter wheat and things like that. And so you know, when the corn starts getting ready, you cut the corn and you haul it in. And then whenever the beans come ready, you stop cutting corn. You stop, you know, harvesting corn, and you go out and you grab the beans. And then you switch your heads back over and you go out and get corn again. That's kind of how it was. They would go from one field to the other. She'd been there for, I don't know. I don't know how long it takes to harvest a field by hand. I've never done that, and I don't think I want to try it. But she was there, and Ruth had made such an impression upon those people in this city. They said, look at this. She is a virtuous woman. And, you know, people knew who she was. She was considered to be, they were like, yeah, you know, come on. You know, Ruth is a part of us. They had pulled her into the community. Except now you have things getting down to the nitty-gritty. Here, Boaz says, except for Ruth, the Moabitess. He pulls that in. I don't know why. But he does. He says, Ruth the Moabitess, you have to take her to be your wife and raise up a child with her so he can take that part of the inheritance. That's a catch. That's part of that levirate law that we looked at in Deuteronomy 25 last week. All right? Now, remember what we said about that levirate law. The law specifically stated they had to be brothers of the dead man and live on the same property. But that's not what we have here. What do we have? We have relatives, and they're not living on the same property. That's not like things would go in our day, would they? No, if there's a law that somebody wants to make use of, what do? We make sure all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, right? Everything fits in that line. If it doesn't fit, we don't use it. Well, this is completely different. Boaz and this relative, because he challenged them in front of the elders of the city, understood that there was a moral obligation for them to do this. Boaz here, he is becoming the champion. Can you imagine what that would be like in a courtroom setting? Proclaiming morality, walking in and challenging everyone. Here, look, this is what is right for us to do. It's right for us to come in, and it's right for us to take care of Naomi and Ruth. The law didn't say that they had to. So they weren't necessarily following the exact letter of the law like we tend to want to do, don't we? That bugs me sometimes, doesn't it? I mean, bugs me. It's like, oh. So sometimes in my spiritual life, I just want to follow the letter of the law and not necessarily extend it to any type of a moral obligation. Man, I got to watch that. It's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? Look at what Boaz was doing. I mean, if you want a hero to emulate, somebody who is going above and beyond all the time, there's Boaz.
And what time is he doing it? What does it say? What does the book of Judges say? It says, during that time, every man did that which was right in the sight of his own eyes. But here's Boaz, who said, you know what? I'm going to let God determine what I do. I am going to extend ministry. I'm going to extend service. I'm going to extend the love of God on these people. And it's amazing what he does. Absolutely amazing. Can you believe it? Because now all of a sudden, we can start looking at the theological pictures, okay? I always try to be really careful when we start talking about pictures. But when you use terms, goel, redeemer, that God used for himself, the picture starts becoming very clear. God calls himself a redeemer of Israel. And that really hits home, doesn't it? It should. Because we start thinking about Jesus Christ who redeemed us. He bought us when we were what? Sinners. You got any other words in there? How about enemies? How about dead in trespasses and sins? How about wretched men, Paul says? Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, get back to the story. Boaz says to Bob, whatever his name is, okay, Bob being the kinsman redeemer that the Bible doesn't, we just need a name for him today. Bob, when you buy this land, you must take Ruth the Moabitess. Bob is not willing to do that. So I'm not going to do it because if I do that, it will impair my inheritance. If you read the King James, it'll say mar. Okay, it's going to mess things up for me. What do you mean? How is this going to hurt Bob? Because now we understand the risk that maybe Boaz is taking. Maybe when Boaz does this, he's risking something himself. It all has to do with inheritance. So when God set this stuff up, when God said, okay, this is how we're going to separate the land. Every family gets a certain parcel of land, all right? And as they have children, certain children get certain portions of that land, okay? That's the inheritance. That's how they live their lives. That's how they make their living, how they survive. Part of who they are as Israelites, right? So here's this parcel of land that is Elimelech's. Naomi's going to sell it. Well, it can go to somebody in the family. Awesome. Naomi gets taken care of. The family member gets more land. Good deal. But when you throw in Ruth, now things get kind of complicated for the Redeemer. Because that first son that they have gains the entirety of the inheritance that is Elimelech's. So whatever son that Boaz has, or the Bob the Redeemer, okay, he would get all that back. Well, that's, okay. But there's more to that. Because the Redeemer seems to think, or Bob seems to think, that there's more to it than just taking Elimelech's land, farming it for, let's just say, 20 years, gaining the proceeds from that, and then turning it over when the guy is old enough to start farming it himself, right? I mean, what would be the harm in that, really? 20 years of proceeds on a parcel of ground, that's pretty good investment, don't you think? I do. I mean, you looked at crop prices, especially not necessarily this year, but couple years ago. I mean, they were buying land all over everywhere in Iowa, spending millions of dollars to do it so that they could put more corn on it because prices were that good. Is he afraid the sun would throw him out? No, not quite. But he says here that it's going to mess up his inheritance. It's going to mar it. So, a couple of things going on here. Number one, it could create just division within his own family. So, we have to understand that Bob is an unmarried man. Boaz is an unmarried man, right? They're older, okay? So, they might have had families in the past, but the Bible doesn't say, okay? So, if Bob has a bunch of kids, right? Let's just say Bob has a bunch of kids. Then he raises this one kid up, and this one kid gets the whole of Elimelech's, right? So when you inherited something in the Old Testament, if you were the firstborn, you got a double portion of what everybody else got. So what that means, if there was three brothers, they divided up the land four ways. The oldest got two. You got the double portion, right? So this son now becomes highly favored because instead of getting just one single portion, he gets all of Elimelech's estate. He instantly becomes wealthy. All right? So that mars this guy's inheritance. Could be, let's just say, that Bob never married. Or Bob didn't have any boys. And so if he had sons after that first son, then there is some question on whether or not he could have even taken the double portion of Bob's inheritance. Because he would be raised up in that son's, that dad, or Elimelech's name, but he was also Bob's first son. There are commentators who think that way. Okay? There is a huge risk here for Bob to take Ruth the Moabitess. Then, not on top of that, okay, it says Ruth the Moabitess. Okay? Israel and Moab didn't necessarily get along. There's some racial tension there. Yeah, throw out that word. There's some racial tension. Bob says, I don't want to go down that road. I don't want to deal with that. How will that make me look? Boaz says, hey, I've seen her in the field. I know she's a hard worker. I know everybody looks at her as a virtuous woman. She's top notch. I'm not scared of that. Bob, on the other hand, he's like, nah, I don't want to do it. And so as was the custom, we read that the guy would take off his sandal. Most of us would be like, no, you can have that. Guy would take off his sandal and hand it to the other guy and say, here, I'm transferring the right to you. Okay, so he did that. He did that in front of all the elders. And so then that day, that transaction, now I know this sounds a little archaic, but he purchased Ruth to be his wife. That's what happened. They go home and they have a kid. His name is Obed. Right? Obed grows up, he has a son named Jesse. Jesse grows up, has a bunch of sons, the last one of whom is named David. What an amazing story of redemption here. Oh, there's one more thing I forgot. You know, when you get away from your notes, you leave some interesting stuff out, okay? Here's a really kind of interesting thing. And going along with raising up the name, okay? The word shame or name does not mean simply the label by which one is identified. Okay,
Boaz was not asking the Goel, Bob, to recover the name Elimelech or Mahlon by giving it to someone. Rather, he used the name of it in its dynamic sense as a designation for the memory of a person's deeds, achievements, one's reputation and honor, as well as a metonymic expression for one's descendants who give one sort of posthumous existence. In the ancient world, one of the most fearful curses one could invoke on another was, may your seed perish and your name die out. Now, another way that this person was risking. Basically, what it was that your name, your family name, was part of your wealth. Right? It was important for you to hold up that reputation. And so for him to take on Ruth meant even that some of whatever Mahlon and Chilion did would have then been applied to his son. What if this Bob and Ruth had had a son, but they'd had no other kids? Well, then we have another problem, don't we? That's a huge risk, right? Bob's name could have been wiped from existence. Well, you don't even know what it is today, do we? Isn't that interesting? There's a lot of risks involved with this redemption process. There was a lot of risks involved for Jesus when he redeemed us. Do you realize that? That Jesus bought us with his own blood? He's choosing to allow us to be called by his name. In everything that we are and everything that we've ever done. That's a pretty big risk. Not only that, but he bought us in the sense that he paid the price for our sin. When Jesus was on the cross, he cried out, God, my God, why have you forsaken me? He had never been outside of that fellowship in the love of God before. That was a risk that Jesus took for us. Now, let's just think deeply about the picture that the story of Ruth, that's the story of what Boaz does for Ruth and Naomi, and compare it just a little bit. In your mind, think about what Jesus did for us. What does that bring to you? And I was contemplating this, and it was a struggle for me. I'm like, God, why did you do this? What am I supposed to do about it? I need something that I can physically do. Right? Well, I could raise my children better. Right? What else could I could work harder at work to be worthy of what you did. And all those things, just they continue to fall short, right? And so the last thing I was left with was thankfulness. Being deeply grateful for what Jesus did. And we see it beautifully here in the book of Ruth. I'm tempted just to leave it there. If you get nothing else this week out of this, what happened? I want you to be deeply grateful for the redemption that Jesus Christ provided through his blood. But there are other things here to learn, other things to emulate, other things to go and say, you know what? Okay, I get it.
I need to be grateful for this redemption. But look at how Boaz goes above and beyond, and he shows that love that only God, only that relationship with God can produce in a person. And he does it even to the risk of his own name. He sacrifices it. Now, let me ask you that question. Again, I think we talked a little bit about this last week. Are we ready? Are we ready to make that kind of a commitment to live out this life, this abundant life that Christ gives us, and risk it all for one who did the same for us? Because it's a scary proposition. What if I lose my reputation? What if I lose my job? What if I lose this? What if I lose that? We're so inundated with stuff. We like to have our stuff around us. But what if I lose it all? Let me show you in the book of Ruth, Boaz could have lost it all. But God provided what? A future. We read this in the book of, read this in the last few verses. In verse 13, it says, "So Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. He went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him.' Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the woman of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, 'A son has been born to Naomi,' and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. Jesse, father, David." And you might be looking at this, what in the world do we see here that's so wonderful about sacrifice? God provided the future. God is the one who provided the future for Naomi, Ruth, and even Boaz was all wound up into that. Boaz could have been afraid to mar his own inheritance. It could have happened. Maybe it did. But look what happened. Look what God did in return. I'm not saying that everything that we're going to do, everything that we sacrifice for, is going to turn out just like we think it should. You know, if I sacrifice this, I might get this. I'm not speaking in those terms. Okay. But if we're willing to sacrifice for God, what are we going to see out of it? Are we going to see a family turned around? Are we going to see people looking at us, maybe saying, you know, I want what they have. I want Jesus in my life. Are we going to see a legacy that goes, that's built and proclaims Christ through the ages? I don't know what we'll see. I know we'll see reward in heaven. On that day, when God judges. But look at the story. Look at the characteristics of the characters. See how they act and see the results. I can't say that it's going to happen exactly the same way, but I can say that God works and God rewards. So while you're feeling deeply grateful for the redemption that God provided in Jesus Christ, also consider what it means to live above and beyond. To go beyond the letter of the law
and show the love of God to those that we're with. You pray with me today. Jesus, we love you, and sometimes these truths that we learn in the scriptures that we see pictures of are overwhelming, and they're hard to communicate. But I pray that you would, with your Spirit, teach us these things and to make them real, to make them alive to us, something that we can enjoy. Lord, give us the opportunity to love people. Help us to have the mindset that we're going to sacrifice of ourselves, whatever it takes, to follow what you did. And Lord, we just look and see for the way that you supply our needs, that you are a God who did not let Elimelech's name be wiped off the map. Lord, but we this week desire to have that gratefulness for you, what you did. Help us to have that time of meditation and meditating on that concept. And I pray that as we speak with you, as we relate to you, that you will show us deeper meanings. We just thank you for all that you do for us. In Jesus' name, amen.